Daughters of Eden, written by Charlotte Bingham and read by Kim Hicks.
This other Eden, this precious stone set in the silver sea. Richard II, Shakespeare. Prologue. To dream of Eden is to dream of a quiet wooded valley where nothing but birdsong is heard, where the clean, clear waters of a river undulate in a peaceful ribbon, on either side of which the grass is grown and cut for the simple pleasure of walking. Trees have been planted, so that it takes only a gentle breeze to bend them forward to see their leafy reflections in the water below. And there is a house, palely lit in the early morning light, its window casements long and graceful, its classical Corinthian columns guarding shallow steps that lead up to vast, carved double doors. Around the garden are grouped buildings of the same stone as the house, lodges and cottages, an ice house, a gazebo for lakeside picnics. Further on, a stable yard houses a clock with gold-painted numerals and a cobbled stone yard that once rang to the sound of thoroughbred hooves. But no one lives at this other Eden now. No one that was born there, that is. No one that once ran about its lawns, or pushed the old ridge-bottomed wooden boat onto its lake, or sat above the aqueduct, listening to the waters rushing through below, now haunts its follies. There are no beautifully dressed women to be seen, gloved hands resting on the perfectly tailored sleeves of the men accompanying them, all of them laughing and talking, wondering at the beauty of some new day. Now all that can be heard are secrets being plotted in and around the walls of the old house, secrets that will shape lives and change the world and Eden forever. Part 1. England in the late 1930s. Chapter 1. Mrs. Beaumont sighed with satisfaction as she put down the Times, for there in the engagement column was the announcement of her darling daughter Poppy's forthcoming marriage. She patted the side of her hair and then picked up the newspaper again. Mr. and Mrs. Spencer Tyne and Beaumont are pleased to announce the engagement of their beloved daughter Poppy Elizabeth to Arthur Basil Hetchett Tetherington, 4th Baron Tetherington. Despite the announcements having been made some months before and the weddings being about to take place, Westminster, the Savoy, and all the usual trimmings, Aurelia Beaumont still loved to start off the day by once again reading that announcement in the now yellowing copy of the Thunderer. It was the knowledge of the apoplexy with which the rival mothers of other debutantes would have greeted the announcement that gave her such particular pleasure. She could hear them moaning to each other on their telephones or from under their hats over lunch at the Savoy.
"Poppy Beaumont, of all people! I mean, of all the girls out this season, you would never think that she would be snapped up by a baron. And not just any baron, not some ropey old Irish peer, but a rich English baron, owner of a vast estate, a house in Eaton Square, everything you could wish for. And she as plain as a pikestaff. And wears spectacles!"
Aurelia stared with quiet pride around her bedroom as the maid came in to take away her breakfast tray. Poppy might not be a beauty, but she obviously must have something special to attract such a handsome, amusing and elegant man as Basil Tetherington. For why else would he have snapped Poppy up after only three balls and a luncheon? He was so generous, too. Nothing would do but he must buy her a new motor car, which Poppy hoped one day to be able to drive, but in which he now drove her. With all the talk of war, by necessity it had been a whirlwind romance. But a romance it most certainly was, for Mrs. Beaumont was sure that Poppy was quite as happy to marry Basil as he was to marry her.
"Ah, there you are, my dear. Out again, do I see?"
Poppy peered round the door at her mother, who was now preening herself in front of a silver hand mirror. The ostrich feather trimming of her bed jacket caused Poppy to sneeze suddenly and vehemently as she drew close.
"Yes, Mother, I am just going out to meet Mary Jane Ogilvy for lunch,"